When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. What's going on, Chris?
Ethan, how are you, man?
Getting ready for this Orlando series, man. I am so excited to see what is in store for the Cavs as they go on the road. And there's a lot of different things that could play out. And a lot of things that have meaningful identities when it comes to that road series. So, Chris, to get your insight on everything going on, it's time for another episode of Hey, Chris. We got all the information from our subtexters, the questions, but Chris, you even wanted to play a little game with the subtexters today, and I found it pretty funny. So, you asked the subtexters what they would like to see different from the Cavs entering Game 3. That got a lot of responses, Chris, but they were pretty similar and led into the questions we got from our subtexters for the Hey Chris episode. So we're going to start with your question, and then we're going to go into the questions we got from subtexters. So here are the four things that Cavs subtexters and fans said that they would like to look different when it comes to the Cavs heading into Orlando. Number one, limiting turnovers. 33 turnovers in two games for the Cavs. They were not happy with how the ball has been secured or protected. Number two, improved shooting. One fan specifically asked for a game of 38% or better from beyond the arc. I don't know. That doesn't seem too far-fetched, but like that's looking at the regular season and not the playoffs. So, number three is better overall play from Darius Garland. A lot of people suggested that they didn't know if Darius Garland could run the offense, Chris. And I'm going to add in especially because he's being guarded by Jalen Suggs. Here's the last one and the fourth one. If they get a lead, and we've said this all season, don't get too comfortable and let the Magic back in the game. And keep the Cavs' feet on the Magic's neck. Some people use pedal to the metal. Some people use foot to the gas. There was a lot of different analogies thrown around. But Chris, what are your thoughts on these four key points that fans think should change for the Cavs entering Game 3?
I think, Ethan, a couple of those are the ones that J.B. Bickerstaff continues to preach going into Game 3. The turnovers, that to me is the glaring one. The Cavs, they have more turnovers than any other team in the playoffs so far. Darius Garland is very, very close to as many turnovers as assists. Donovan Mitchell is equal to the number of assists and turnovers. So you're talking about your primary ball handlers, your primary initiators, Darius and Donovan, just not doing a good enough job consistently of protecting the basketball. It's a weird conversation though, right? Because the Cavs have never trailed in this series. They've led the entire way. The game has been tied once between the two teams, and it was for 16 total seconds. So it's hard to sit here and criticize the Cavs' performance so far, being up 2-0 and dominating the way that they have. But there are certain things that maybe they have gotten away with at home that they may not get away with on the road. Orlando's 29-12 at home this year. Young teams are very, very different at home as opposed to on the road. And here's another thing. Not a single team in the NBA playoffs has won a road game so far. So home teams have been better. And the Cavs have to take care of the ball. They have to value possessions. I also think the three-point shooting is poignant because I do think the Magic may start to try and tinker with some things defensively, if they can, to try and neutralize Jarrett and Evan Mobley a little bit more than what has happened in the first two games. That could create opportunities for Max Strus, George Niang, Donovan Mitchell on the perimeter, Darius Garland on the perimeter. So I do think that's an interesting one to follow, especially because, you know, Ethan, that was a big difference in terms of the roster construction coming off the series against the Knicks. They added more shooting, theoretically. They added more spacing, theoretically, and it worked during the regular season. The Cavs were a really good three-point shooting team in terms of makes, attempts, and percentage. Top half of the league in all of those. So far, in the first two games against Orlando, they're not shooting at that kind of clip. They're not taking that number of attempts. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be some kind of positive regression coming for the Cavs.
Yeah, Chris, and I mean, we talked about it when it happened, when Evan Mobley and Darius Garland got hurt during the regular season, and the Cavs completely shifted their style of play to shooting more threes, and that has proved dividends for that team. And going into the playoffs, they've kind of regressed back to going into Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, because that's the matchups where they have mismatches. And sometimes you got to continue to adjust. And I know J.B. Bickerstaff said he didn't say that word. Whatever. We're going to move on. But being able to execute from three-point range and be able to have guys like Max Strus and George Niang to step their game up, we have a couple questions about those guys specifically and the lineups that the Cavs could get to. So, Chris, without further ado, let's get into those questions. So, I also want to point this out before we get into the questions. I know I just gave a little tease, that's my bad. But this is being recorded at 10:11 p.m. on Tuesday, air on Wednesday. And currently, I know Chris mentioned that no road team has won a playoff game. I want to make sure that we don't get backlash because the Pacers are beating the Bucks currently in the third quarter. It's a close game, but we'll see how that comes down to the wire. And it does not look like the Suns are going to beat the Timberwolves, but game's not over yet. So that's just a little preface that we are recording while these games are still going on. And obviously, the Mavericks and the Clippers have yet to play tonight. Now, let's get into the questions. Okay, like I said, these four major points go right into the questions that we said. So the first question is rather simple, Chris. What do you think the Cavs need to do in order to shoot the three ball better or improve their scoring as a whole, despite being against an elite defense?
I think the best thing that they can do to generate more quality looks, and look, I think some of the shots that Max Strus has gotten in this series have been clean, quality looks. George Niang, I'm not sure that he's taken a contested three so far in this series. He's just missing shots. I think he's a guy who, over the course of his career, has shown that he can make those shots, and sometimes shooters just go into an untimely funk. I don't sense anything like the Magic guarding him a different kind of way, crowding him, beating him up physically, getting a hand in his face. I'm not seeing that when it comes to Niang. I'm just seeing a guy who's missing open shots that he normally makes, and there could be some regression coming positively for him going into game three. But I think when it comes to creating quality shots, I mean, I think the Cavs formula has been the same all season long, right? It's break down the defense with dribble penetration, drive and kick. So it's on Darius Garland, it's on Donovan Mitchell, it's on Caris LeVert to create quality shots for some of these shooters that are spaced out, open in the corners, or maybe the Cavs can introduce a little bit more off-ball movement specifically for Max Strus to see, you know, if they can get him going. But I just don't think it's interesting because Niang and Strus have not shot the ball as well as they would want to, right? But I don't think JB has looked at the first two games of this series saying George and Max aren't getting us the things that we need from them. And if that was the case, then I think there would maybe be more urgency from JB to try and get those guys going a little bit, whether it's call plays for them, run sets that they're really comfortable running. But I think he understands that both those guys have been making a positive impact in other ways. And just by having them out there on the floor, spacing the court, creating attention, taking pressure off of teammates, those kinds of things are beneficial to the Cavs as a whole. And as long as those guys are doing those kinds of things, Max Strus with his rebounding, George Niang with his physicality and the edge that he plays with, as long as those things continue to happen, I think JB is going to be just fine with the contributions of both of those guys and believe that their shots are going to come around eventually because they're too good of shooters to keep shooting like this, especially when a lot of their shots are open ones.
Yeah, Chris, and I mean, I think just continuing to use guard-on-guard ball screens, off-ball ball screens, off-side ball screens, like DHOs, things that they've seen that have worked throughout the season and not going away from their game plan is going to help them. Because like we said in the first game, they missed 18, 19 threes in a row. Max Strus and George Niang are known shooters. There's going to be a game where one of them, if not both of them, has a great night. And that's simply what really needs to happen. I talked to Darius Garland after game two, and he said that once he saw one go, the rim looked like an ocean. So sometimes that's all you need as an NBA player is to see one go. George Niang has yet to see that happen. So that's going to have to happen for him. And Max Strus has only hit probably the first couple that he's hit in each game and then kind of driven off in those department.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, through two games, the combination of Max Strus and George Niang are 2 of 18 from three-point range. That's certainly not what they expect. That's not what the Cavs expect. That's not why the Cavs went out and targeted them in the offseason. They expected them to make playoff-level threes. And the good news for both of those guys is that despite those shooting woes, the Cavs are still up 2-0.
Next question. The next two questions are basically about those guys too, Chris. Like I said, these are kind of similar, but they go into depth on different areas. So next question from Stefan in Parma is, Max Strus clearly has an impact when he's not scoring, as you mentioned, but he was brought here to hit three-point shots, and it would be really helpful if he would start hitting them again. Do you have any ideas why his three-point shooting is down this year? So not just talking about this playoff series, but this year as well. And I think it's a couple of things, Chris. One, I think he has more attention as a shot maker this season than he did when he was in Miami, for one. And two, I also think that he has more roles for this Cavs team than he did when he was in Miami. He's being asked to rebound more. He's being asked to get the offense flowing more. And sometimes that leads to less shots or even more contested shots for him this season. Obviously, we know that that hasn't been the case in this playoff series. But I think his number has dwindled because sometimes when your role increases in different areas, your main source of game sometimes can depreciate. But I think he's still got a lot to show in the playoff series, and I think he can do what he needs to, which is knock down shots.
I also think, Ethan, there are a couple of other things involved here. He is a high-volume three-point shooter. So typically, I say typically, because people are going to bring up the examples of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and some of these guys from the past. But if you're taking 7 threes a game, chances of you shooting 40 to 45%, especially given the difficulty of some of the shots that Max takes throughout the course of the season, probably not going to be on the higher end of percentages. The other thing is, he's basically at his career average when it comes to three-point shooting. He is a career 36.5% three-point shooter, and he shot 35% this year for the Cavs. That's not that far off. He's got one season in his entire career, Ethan, where he has shot the ball better than 35% from three-point range. And it was in 21-22 when he shot 41%. But if you look at the career numbers, that appears to be more of the outlier year, and who he is more of right around 35-36%. And on high volume, creating the gravity that he does, the difficulty of the shots that he takes, I think that's probably, I don't know, I guess it could get a little bit better moving forward, but I think that's just about where he's going to hover in his career.
I don't disagree. Next question, Chris. It's two, basically. They asked the same question, so I put it into one. But I'm going to give both of them a shout-out. So Anu in San Francisco and Gary in Columbus asking about the 8-man rotation. And with George Niang not hitting shots and Sam Merrill not being a great fit with matchups, would Tristan Thompson or Marcus Morris Sr. be tapped as the 9th man, and why? They both noted that Tristan and Marcus' playoff experience and toughness could play a factor. And Chris, I think off the bat, it's based on matchups and what the Cavs need. Like, if they need more shooting, or they feel like they need more spacing, and that's probably going to lean more into Marcus Morris Sr.'s territory. But when you look at maybe Jared Allen or Evan Mobley don't have a great night, or they, like you said, Chris, the Orlando Magic switch and start to try and focus on those two. Can they switch to Tristan Thompson, and what is he going to be able to bring? So I think, like we've said all season, it's about matchups and what the Cavs need in every given scenario.
So let's look at the first two games of the series against Orlando, Ethan. do you sit there and you look at the first two games and say, man, the Cavs are really missing what Tristan Thompson could give them? No. They're winning the rebounding battle by more than 20. They're winning the offensive rebounding battle so far. There is no hint that the Cavs are not being tough enough or physical enough. There's no hint that they're not getting enough from the backup center spot. Because Evan Mobley, when he plays the five without Jared Allen, has been really, really good. He's been attacking mismatches. He's been strong on the interior. He hasn't been getting pushed around. He is neutralizing Paolo Banchero. And then you keep going down the list and you ask yourself, okay, what are the things that Tristan does best? What are the things that Marcus Morris Sr. does best? And have the Cavs needed those things in the first two games? I don't think they have. So if they get to a point where they're on the road, game three, some of these younger players, more inexperienced players, look uncomfortable, get into foul trouble, aren't giving the Cavs the things that they gave them in the first two games, and JB feels like, hey, there are things that both Marcus Morris Sr. and Tristan Thompson bring to the table that we're missing for whatever reason, then he's got a plan to go to one of those guys, if not both of those guys. But I just don't think that there is something specific that stands out to me that I would sit here and say, well, they need Tristan for this, or they need Marcus Morris Sr. for this. Maybe in the Boston series, maybe as this series progresses, but I haven't had that feeling in the first two games, and it's clear that JB Bickerstaff hasn't either.
I mean, in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in game two, as the game was coming to an end, supposedly, fans started screaming, we want Tristan. And I think for the Cavs' final few minutes, they benefited from not putting him in. That would have been disastrous if the Magic would have came all the way back. But in the same vein, I'm talking as a fun thing, not an analytics, not nothing like that. I would love to just see Tristan Thompson, Mo Wagner, or Marcus Morris Sr. go at it. Because that would be a funny matchup. That would be something that would drive the crowd. And maybe that's something that the Cavs would need in a enemy territory situation when they're in Orlando. But that's not looking at matchups, and that's not looking at strategy and stuff like that. That's just toughness and physicality, and who knows? But probably not.
It's also playing into the hands of the Magic.
Yeah.
It is. The Cavs being able to show their toughness, show their physicality, show all of the things that you want, their edginess, while not getting caught up into that nonsense, I think that speaks volumes about this team, the evolution of this team, the growth of this team. And I think the Magic would be more than happy for the Cavs to cross that line, right, and get caught up in that nonsense and take their focus off the main thing. I think, personally, they need to continue to avoid those kinds of things because it's just not worth it. And they don't need to help the Magic in any sort of way. The Magic need help.
I know you're right. And I said as a preface that that was just me throwing out a scenario. But you're absolutely right. Like, the situations where we've seen Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen stick up for themselves and things of that nature. And it looks like Tristan Thompson and Marcus Morris Sr., where they're on the bench, like, anytime something happens, they're the two first people to stand up, giving energy, speaking life into their players. I think that's also a good role. And both of them knowing that that's their role has really helped the Cavs as well. But, Chris, last question for today's podcast comes from Alec in Chicago, who asks, if the Magic start blitzing the Cavs' guards, can you see more staggering of the Cavs' bigs?
I think you could, sure. I mean, like, if things aren't going the way that the Cavs want them to go, if some of the adjustments that the Magic start to make throughout the course of this series are bothering the Cavs at either end of the floor, JB's going to make an adjustment. And I think there's an understanding that if he has to give a different look, if he has to space the court a little bit more, if he has to put more shooting on the floor, then that means one of the bigs comes off. Whether it's Jarrett, whether it's Evan, based on kind of where the game is, where the rotations are, things along those lines. That option exists for the Cavs. And I do think there are two ways to attack the blitz, right? I think one of the ways is use Jared Allen or Evan Mobley, use their passing as kind of like the outlet and allow them to become the playmaker in 4-on-3 situations out of the pocket. We've seen both of those guys be really effective at that, right? The other way to attack the blitz is, you know, put more shooting on the court so that the Magic feel a little bit queasy about that kind of strategy, because they understand if they're going to send two on the ball on some of those screening actions and try and make Darius uncomfortable or Donovan uncomfortable, then that means somebody is going to be open on the perimeter. And if you have, you know, Max Strus and George Niang out there, a team might be more hesitant to do that, or that's one way that you can certainly take them out of that particular strategy. So I think one of the things that the Cavs are working on here going into game three is just what is the best approach to handle those blitzes. The thing that I will say is that they have much better personnel to combat that kind of strategy than what they had last year when the Knicks used that against them.
All right, Chris, well, that was the last question, but I want to open it up to you to figure out if there's anything else that you're looking for the Cavs to improve on, or things that you think the Magic might throw at them in game three.
I think, Ethan, the thing that stands out to me is the offensive end of the floor. I totally understand that the Cavs are playing the number three defense in the NBA, and there are certainly some size advantages in terms of length that the Magic have when it comes to, you know, trying to slow down this Cavs offense. And, you know, it's hard to get too critical given the fact that the Cavs have a 2-0 series lead and they haven't trailed at all at any point. But it's been two games and they've yet to crack the 100-point mark. It's been two games and they've got one of the worst offenses in the playoffs once again. I think if we're talking bigger picture, if we're talking about the things that matter most to this team, they've got to show a little bit more dynamic capability on the offensive end, I think. If you're going to start to feel better about their chances of making a deeper playoff run, scoring 96 points, scoring 97 points, even though it is against the Magic, that's not really what's going to make you feel good about this team and their chances beyond this particular series against the Magic. So that's the one thing that I'm looking at, is can the Cavs find a way to generate more consistent offense and get this offense to a level that is closer to where the defense is, that the two sides of the floor complement each other a little bit better. It just feels like, you know, everything with the Cavs offensively is a chore, and they work so hard to generate quality looks. The only time in this series that they didn't have to work overly hard just to get consistent quality looks is when Jalen Suggs was helped to the back and Markelle Fultz replaced him, and the Cavs had like a figurative target, a beaming target on the back of Markelle Fultz, and they just kept attacking him relentlessly. I know that the Magic are formidable on defense, but I want to see them have that level of aggressiveness. I want to see them have that level of attack-mindedness in the next two games to see if they can finally, at some point, crack the 100-point mark in a playoff game.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And I'm looking at some numbers, and it looks like outside of the Cavs, any team in this playoffs that has scored under 100 points has lost, outside of the Thunder-Pelicans game one, where the Thunder scored 94 and the Pelicans scored 92. So, looking forward and looking bigger picture, the Cavs definitely need to find a way, even against good defenses, because as we know, whoever they play in the next round, whether it's Boston or Miami, they're going to have good defenses as well, and they're going to need to score over 100 points to have a chance in that series. But Chris, is there anything else you would like to discuss before we wrap up today's podcast?
No, man. I'm good. I got to go pack. I got to go do some more laundry. I got to get ready for this road trip, man.
Road trip season, Orlando, and it's the playoffs? Oh, man. I can only imagine all the trouble Chris is going to get into. Anyway, but until next time, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast, where you should subscribe to Subtext. This is a way to get into a Cavs community, and you can hear from Chris and me when you talk about everything related to the Cavs, when it's injuries, whether it's numbers, whether it's analytics that you might not have, but this is the only way to get that information. So sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. So, if you want to have your voice heard, subscribe to Subtext and get your questions off or answer any question that Chris might throw at you. So, with all that being said, we out!